I just started to think about, well, what if I only did doors? The handyman industry, it can be really hard and very, 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 very time consuming. I would get home from work doing handyman work. And if I was building a deck, but the next day I was going to be doing interior finishes, my pickup truck was just hammered down with rough carpentry tools and lumber. And it's like, so I would spend 2 hours that night getting all that stuff cleaned out, put away, organized in my shed and garage. And then I go, okay, what do I need for tomorrow? And I would load up those finish tools.
The Blue Collar Voices Show.
The answer to the last trivia question is 8 horsepower, and it could reach a top speed of 28 miles per hour.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, now go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
Welcome. We are back with Jay Bergfield in part two. Now, back to where we left off in the last episode.
Basically, I decided, yes, I want to start a handyman business. So that was my decision. I told my boss, hey, I'm going to go ahead and start a handyman business because I fell in love with side jobs, working for homeowners. And he said, hey, that's really neat. You know, did my 2-week notice type, moved on. To specialize to where I got there was I got my business license and hit the ground running. The job leads just started flowing. It was really neat. One referral after another referral. But in Washington, we're not allowed to do plumbing and electrical unless you're licensed. Can't even change a faucet or switch an outlet.
Wow.
Yep. So that's tough. And so when I first started my handyman business, got licensed, I was like, okay, so I can't do that stuff. I'm pretty well limited to just carpentry. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay. At first, I thought the phone calls and the job leads were going to absolutely expect me to do plumbing and faucets. And, you know, there's a great handful of people that would contact me for a faucet replacement. You know, hey, I'm not allowed to do plumbing here in Washington. And some people understood it. And some people didn't. They thought it was silly. And I was like, I know, I agree. It is kind of silly. But I just stuck with doing what's right, what the law was. And I said, okay, well, if I can't do it, I won't do it. And I'm going to see how it works for carpentry. So right away, specializing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So handyman, I thought I was going to do all things. Quickly learned that I can't do all things. So I had to specialize. And niche down, and I just stuck with carpentry. And from there, I just started niching down more and more and more, limiting my services.
Are you starting to develop a reputation? People know that if you need a door installed and you need that door right, Jay's the guy to call.
Yeah, absolutely. At first, the plumbing stuff, those kind of phone calls, it's weird. I was getting those phone calls, but it didn't take long for maybe word to spread. That guy doesn't do plumbing, electrical. Those calls stopped coming in. Mm-hmm. As Jay's handyman service, those type of leads faded away. I started getting a reputation of doing finish work. Hey, this guy's really good at finish carpentry. So recommendations are huge. Word of mouth is huge.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The more of one thing you do, the more of it you're going to get. Specialization, I think, is awesome. So finished work, I just was lucky and got a lot of it. But at the same time, work is work. And if I got a job to build a small deck, I would do that, or build an awning to cover some four wheelers, or moss removal, cleaning roofs, gutter cleaning. I still did all that.
Sure.
Got to keep working. And I liked it too. My friend owns an exterior cleaning business. A couple friends did exterior cleaning the whole time I was doing carpentry work. As a union carpenter, I didn't really understand cleaning gutters and window cleaning and exterior cleaning. I was just kind of like, well, I don't know if I would enjoy that. Boy, after 15 years in the union and then as a handyman business, cleaning gutters was, I found it pretty awesome. It was a change of scenery.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I liked it. And then I got it. I understood it. You're outdoors, meeting people, working for yourself. No one's yelling at you, bring those 2x4, you know, let's go, boys. Like, you're working alone and you're working for awesome customers.
Right. And they really appreciate you.
Oh, so much. Yeah. The best boss I had was my latest boss on that maintenance crew. He appreciates people so much. He was amazing. He appreciated us a lot, but working for homeowners, they really appreciate it. They really do.
Sure. Have you noticed as you've niched down that the level of quality and I guess the grandeur of the type of doors that you're working on, has that risen?
Yeah. Once I started self-employed with the carpentry stuff, my skill set only got better the more I went. And I think I'm a better carpenter now than I would have been if I stayed in the union.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Because where I was working before as an employee, finish work was very limited in my town. And I had to drive to Portland. At least I had to drive 40 miles away to sometimes an hour away to these finish jobs every day on the freeway. And I eventually couldn't drive that far for work anymore. I hated it.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I love the work and I love those type of workers I was around, but I wasn't going to chase finish carpentry by driving far, far away.
I noticed on one of your Facebook posts, you were showing the tools that you got. If I remember correctly, it was basically kind of like leveling up. So you've got tools to work with doors, but it's a higher grade level of tools, more higher end, better tools to help you do doors better. Do you remember the post that I'm talking about?
Yeah, probably. You know, I've shared sometimes about the hinge butt mortising template. Yeah, specialty door tools. Absolutely.
Okay. And how did you do that before you got those nicer tools?
Lower quality tools or homemade templates.
Okay.
Routery and hinges on a door, I actually freehanded. I got pretty darn good at it. It's super slow because you're following your pencil mark with your router mortising out for that hinge. Mm-hmm. If you slip, you bust through the edge and then that's not good. So I just took my time holding that router nice and steady and I got it. I was able to do it, but it was so slow.
And so with these tools you have now, is it like a jig you can put the router on and it's just, I mean, perfect?
Yeah. And it's more quality than I was doing freehand, obviously. Freehand, I felt like it looked pretty darn good and it was, but not to that standard of a template.
Right. Because now it is, for all intents and purposes, it's perfect. It matches exactly.
Yep.
Okay. I love that. Yeah, that's great.
And like for boring doorknob holes, I was using the Milwaukee plastic. They make a plastic clamp-on template. So you drill your hole in the exact spot, relatively straight is the idea. And it works. And it's great. And it does work, but it is plastic. So mm-hmm. I bought this one that is aircraft aluminum and it clamps down on both sides of the door. So you don't need to move your jig over to the other side of the slab for starting the bore on the other side. It's all ready to go. So it is quicker and it'll last longer ultimately.
I'm going to assume that you've ran into situations where neither the door nor the door opening were hinged, and so you're having to do all of that on both sides. Is there a standard for how far apart the hinges are, how far they are down, how far they are up, that type of thing?
Yeah. Yeah, there is, you know, typically about 7 inches down from the top. Then I think around 36 down to 67 inches or so. And honestly, I measure off of the door that I'm mimicking, that I'm reproducing. Okay. So I measure what the hinge locations were on that previous door, and I make it exactly like that. Right now, if I were to build my own prehang, I would shoot for 7 inches down, 36 and 67, 11 inches off the bottom.
All right. Have you built any custom doors?
No, not myself. No, I just don't have the shop space or the tools.
Okay. I've seen some amazing doors, dude. Oh, you look at those and they're just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's a thing to fall in love with doors. Once you step into the world of doors, it's like, oh, there really is a world of doors. Mm-hmm. And doors can be very beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Do you do refinishing of doors? Like you'll take an old door and make it look like new?
No. Because the veneer is so thin, and also lack of experience with the many different staining and finishing products, that's a specialization in itself. I've thought about it. Otherwise, with brand new doors, I have done and will do, but I'm at a point to where I'm going to look for a professional finisher to finish my new doors. I've always done a good job at it, but it takes me a long time in shop space. I do it in my garage or the customer's garage, whether it's lacquer or spar urethane, stuff like that.
Sure. If I'm understanding correctly, you've been in business now 5 years?
Yep. May will be 5 years.
Well, congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you.
Moving forwards, do you have any specific plans as far as tackling additional work or growth? Or are you just continuing to solidify what you're doing now? What are your plans?
So yeah, currently self-employed. It's just been me this whole time. Started out, you know, doing general carpentry, Jay's handyman service. And then once I made that decision, it hit me pretty hard. I was like, dude, I just started to think about, well, what if I only did doors? Because the handyman industry, it can be really hard and very, 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 very time consuming. I would get home from work doing handyman work, and if I was building a deck, but the next day I was going to be doing interior finishes, my pickup truck was just hammered down with rough carpentry tools and lumber. And it's like, so I would spend 2 hours that night getting all that stuff cleaned out, put away, organized in my shed and garage. Mm-hmm. And then I go, okay, what do I need for tomorrow? And I would load up those finish tools and such. So it's very time consuming doing the
swapping around
all things. Yeah. Trying to do all things can be very time consuming in a pickup truck. I knew I wanted a large van, but it just wasn't in my budget at that time. Having a van would really help. Ultimately, I ended up getting one, but it was after I specialized. So okay. As far as continuing my door and interior finishes with like what I do now, I'm just going to stick with the doors, trim, and millwork and casework, but I'm going to weed out the casework. So fine tune my niche to just those three: doors, trim, and millwork.
This is a quick aside. Do you get involved into the security strengthening of the door openings?
I mean, I understand a lot of it, but it's not really a big request.
Okay.
There are times that people have concerns of security, so they ask me thoughts and opinions on it. Oh, what I found out is front entry doors, they can all be kicked in. That's just the way it works. They really can. You can add double plate strike plates for your deadbolt and your doorknob latch. That's really neat, but then the hinges bust off. So the latch side will stay, but then your hinges bust off. The security feature that for standard installation is you use a 3-inch screw on those hinges.
Mm-hmm.
1 3-inch screw or 2-inch at least to drive one long screw in each hinge does add security and it's harder to break in. What happens is the door jam explodes. The door jam explodes either way, whether it's on the strike side or your hinge side. In fire department and police officers, they kind of like that. They need to be able to bust that door in and do what they need to do.
Okay.
A steel commercial grade door is as secure as it gets.
Got you. So back to the van. So you've got your van set up now, pretty much reflecting the doors and that type of work.
Yep.
Okay. As you look at your van, it's set up for what you're trying to do. What would you say your expense is with your van and your tools inside your van, all the equipment? What would something like that be?
Well, yeah, currently I've got a really solid estimate at about $8,000 in tools. Well, not just the tools, but the tools, and I bought tool boxes, drawers, and pack out boxes and stuff like that. Basically, everything I need in my van is $8,000. And I bought the van used for just right at $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, $28,000. But yeah, so $30,000 would be a higher number for a used van. Brand new vans, boy, you know.
They're 60, 70.
Yeah. So then you're rolling around in 80. A finished carpenter can definitely be rolling around with $100,000.
That's insane.
Yeah.
But it is nice having all those tools available. You need it. You have it. You don't feel like you're making do. I hate using something that works, but is not the right tool for the job.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I don't have Fez tool. I don't have a Fez tool chop saw, or I don't need a domino. I might get a domino, but I believe pocket screws are pretty darn strong for like wainscoting and stuff. Once you start dominoing wainscoting boards, it's going to be a lot more expensive. But as far as just the tools in there, you know, I don't have the super highest end Fez tool stuff. I got a lot of DeWalt and Milwaukee and a lot of hand tools. That's kind of, there's a great expense of a lifetime carpenter's collection of just hand tools and the finish tools and the knickknacks and clamps and, you know, and included in stuff like that would be glues and the, all that stuff.
There's a store that I like to drool at. I'm trying to remember what it's called, but they cater to, it's Woodcraft something. I don't know if they have them in your area, but it's a Woodcraft store and you can go in and you can get just, oh my God, these beautiful tools, everything.
Yeah. Woodcrafters.
Is that what it is?
Well, in Portland, there's Woodcrafters. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. And it is insane how much some of that stuff costs.
Oh yeah. Yep. The block planes and scribers and all that stuff, compasses. Like, I remember when I was an apprentice, I'm always buying tools and have a wish list tool list that I will be continuing. But I remember when I was an apprentice, a journeyman carpenter had a $60 compass, you know, for scribing.
Mm-hmm.
And beautiful tool. So they can be expensive. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Woodcrafters is amazing. I wish I was closer.
Oh, yeah. If it was and you start spending all that money on tools, you might not.
Yeah. And spending money on tools, that's another reason I kind of quit doing the handyman stuff. Like I said, I thought to myself, well, what if I only did doors and trim? And it hit me so heavy. I was like, I think I'm going to go ahead and try it. And it just completely took over me. I was like, I'm doing it. And one of the reasons, like I said, it was hard as a handyman was, when do you stop buying tools?
Mm-hmm.
You really don't, and you can't. And then you hire a new employee and then you got even more tools to buy, which is part of the process. And that's a good thing. Continue the growth. But for me, all my profits were going to tools, just all of it.
Yeah.
Which I thought was fine. But once I got close to $8,000 of tools at that time, I was like, Man, that's tough.
Right?
It's not that it's not doable, but it is tough.
Well, think of it this way. Every specialty, plumbing, electrical, which I know you don't do the electrical, you don't do plumbing.
Right.
Sheetrocking, whatever you're going to pick, even if you're a guy that's all you're doing is siding, you're going to have specialty tools that are really going to help you with those.
Yeah.
And if you're a handyman and you're doing 32 different types of work, you cannot have all of those tools.
Yeah.
It gets really pricey. And then you wind up doing the job with not having the optimal tool.
Yeah. And it's still doable. And it's not that it's going to be less of quality, but it's going to be a lot more time consuming. Yeah.
Exactly. And that time can kill you. Just like you're talking about the jig, you put that jig on, you're not stressing, cut it out and you take off the jig and it's done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So any particular stories, anything interesting that you would pick out and say, you know what, I've been doing this now for 5 years and there's a story or two that stands out.
As far as self-employed or.
Yeah. Yeah. Self-employed.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll keep rolling with that.
Some amazing project, something that you're like, wow, I worked on this, you know, two years ago. I did this project. It was amazing.
Oh, one of my favorite projects I did was remodeled a kitchen for a customer, got rid of the outdated cabinets. And this particular customer, his father and him and close family built the house, you know, designed it, built it from the ground up. And it wasn't just a run-of-the-mill house. It was so cool. It was like some kind of Disneyland theme park. It was like the design they put into it was a bungalow cabin, if you will, meant to be different. The cabinets were built by his dad. As tough as it was for him, he was just ready to upgrade the cabinets because they were outdated. Mm-hmm. It had a tile countertop with the grout. He was burnt out on it, but it was really hard for him to let go of that kitchen because his dad built it, but he was ready, got rid of the cabinets. It was all stain grade. And he hired me to build a new kitchen. He hired me at that time at an hourly rate. He said, hey, you know, you don't need to put a bid in on it. I know it's a lot of work for one person. So we got my hourly rate set up at that time. At that time, I was charging $75 an hour, but since it was so much work and he was an awesome regular client, do it for $65 an hour. He was a little concerned about price, but he wasn't concerned, but he's like, man, this is going to be expensive, you know, at $75 an hour. And, you know, I was like, well, yeah, so let's set it up $65 an hour and let's go for it. He designed the kitchen. He had an idea. He drew out his kitchen, how he wanted it to look like, had me custom hand build the cabinets in his garage. So that was neat.
Hand built cabinets.
Yep. So just not production based built. Mm-hmm. No machines, just skill saws, table saws, and routers by hand. He designed it. I drew out the measurements to his drawings. So he drew it. I took the measurements to make sure that it was all going to work. We talked about measurements for every single drawer. He's got favorite containers that he wants to fit in different kinds of drawers and special cabinets of different sizes. So I got the measurements mastered. From there, I just started building the cabinets in his garage. He had a double car garage. Obviously, I don't have a cabinet shop and I only have my small garage here at this place. And that was really neat to be able to build him that kitchen in his garage every day. And it took 3 months, not just the cabinets, the whole scope of work.
Sure.
By myself. We had a plumber come in, electrician come in, and he had a countertop company come in and do the quartz, hired a painter to paint the cabinets. This time around, he wanted painted cabinets, and it looks amazing.
That's great. You'll have to send me a picture of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he had quite the story behind it and all that, so that's kind of why he was a special client. He ended up passing away, rest in peace. I do miss them. We got really close. So
I understand.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I love being self-employed and working for homeowners is that you end up making a lot of friends.
Right.
That's one particular job that I could really think of. I got a client that I've over the, all these years, I've done a lot of finish work for, a lot of trim, pretty outdated house. The style was out of date. Everything was stain grade. It was a block house, or it is a block house, cinder block walls, and very, very different. There's a lot of block houses, but not in my area. So putting trim boards on walls with brick, you're doing a lot of scribe cuts, or the concrete floor is wavy. So your baseboards don't just go down. You have to scribe cut every single baseboard in there. Mm. I replaced all of our interior doors for solid core doors. That was a pretty neat experience to feel the difference of hollow core doors, get those out of there, and then throw in solid core doors and the way they shut.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Mm-hmm. There's no doubt when you've got a solid door.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's good. The other day you had posted in the Facebook group, you had made a long post. And that's really what had overall caught my attention to ask you to be on the show. And do you remember that long post you wrote?
Yeah, on the Handyman Journey Mastermind Group.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit how you were feeling. What was going on that you're like, man, I'm going to write all this out?
Well, just kind of being inspired from one of the members on there. He took the time to kind of coach me, talk to me about a lot of things and the systems and processes that he uses. And from there, I kind of wanted to share a little bit about his story. Just how much we can learn from hearing other people's stories was kind of what that came about from, and a couple other people in the books I've read. I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain. I just started writing, man.
Yeah, that's all good. It's all like, good.
Literally. I'm very passionate about having a mastermind group, having people to lean on, being self-employed. Nobody's going to just do it all by themselves completely. And if they are, and they're happy with it, I just don't see as smooth as progression. You got to have customer service. There's so much more that goes into just doing the work. If you don't have somebody to ask questions to, then I couldn't imagine.
Right.
The group has helped me out tremendously over the years. And it's a place that you can go and just talk about stuff and hear other people's stories. And since being self-employed to now, I've read a lot of books, business books. So that's kind of what I wrote about, was just having a board of directors, people you can lean on. And within that writing, just naturally things came out based upon what I've learned in books.
Okay. Well, speaking of books, and you mentioned the business books, take a moment and list. You don't have to hold back. Just feel free to go on and on, but just list some books that you think are valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. The first book I read was The E-Myth Revisited by Michael E. Gerber. Then I read Profit First by Michael Michalowicz. After reading Profit First, the original book, I came across Profit First for Contractors. That was written by Sean Van Dyke, and it's a takeaway from Profit First, almost as if he got permission to rewrite the book.
Mm-hmm.
It more or less puts it in place in perspective for a contractor versus all business. Profit First is for all business, whether you're self-employed or have employees. And then I read Mike Michalowicz's Pumpkin Plan book, and I read his book called Like Clockwork. Those were, I learned so much from Mike Michalowicz's book, Profit First, Pumpkin Plan, Like Clockwork. And he's got a few others, Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, I haven't read yet, but,
now that sounds interesting.
Yeah. You know, working on a budget type book. I'm looking forward to read that one. Mindset, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. That was a game changer. I feel like kind of changed my life a lot of ways too. Just mindset. Wow. That book is awesome. Another recent book for mindset and not so much mindset, but just I read How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. I learned a lot from that book. I learned a lot about myself. It was kind of like a way to look at who I am as a person from the outside. And I seen a lot of things in me that I could change, you know. At times it seems like I was a know-it-all at certain aspects of carpentry, you know, or whatever I felt that I was good at. And I was quick to give advice. And a lot of that I, you know, kind of get from my dad. That's a good book. Pretty valuable book right there.
Okay. Anything else?
Well, you know, I read a book called Sell Like Crazy. It's like a sales funnel book. That's pretty good. It's more directed to kind of like if you're a business coach or something and you're trying to sell that stuff. But there was a lot of takeaways from it for all self-employed or for all business. I'm currently reading Pocket Full of Do by Chris Do. That's an inspirational book. And I'm currently reading The Home Service Millionaire by Tommy Mello.
Tommy Mello. He is an interesting guy.
He is. I listen to his podcast. He's very energetic. And like he says, he's not afraid to give away his secrets, you know, business. It's awesome.
I think he is the most data-driven person I have ever listened to.
I agree.
Oh, my goodness. And he... And obviously, if you've heard the podcast, he talks about how he trains people and how he runs them through the process and how he scrutinizes and filters out and records and has different phone numbers for all the different segments. He knows exactly what is happening, and he has a dashboard that lets him see all kinds of things.
Yeah. Yep. And he started out in the truck, too, in the van, the garage door van.
I think he'd be a good guy to work for. He's going to be firm, but I think if you work hard and take care of business, he's going to be a great guy.
Oh, I think so too. Being self-employed, any businessman goes through a period of, man, should I just call her quits and get a regular job? This is really hard. So there was a moment where I was like, man, I don't know. Maybe I should just go work for A1 Garage Doors. Like, you know? Because he does. He takes care of his employees, his internal customers, you know? Yeah. I'd read Winning the Contractor Fight by Tom Reber. I read his book. It's a short book. It's full of a lot of good gold nuggets.
Right. And I do follow him. I listen to his podcast and on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. I've learned a lot from him, especially in the sales process. They really hammer down on that sales process, him and I forget one of his old colleagues, to what is sales, you know, and then they break it down and how to sell on the phone.
And qualify.
Yeah, pre-qualify. They got their Shenfu sales process, and off the top of my head, I wouldn't be able to list them all, but one thing I remember from Chris Du is sales is to serve, ask, listen, and empathize. I like how Tom's like, ask him questions and then shut up. Just listen, you know, just listen to the customer. And when you're talking about pricing, just say your price and be quiet.
Yeah. He had some good stuff. I would definitely recommend anybody listen to Tom as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
He gave a good selection of books and ideas and things there.
Yeah. Books are very important. That long post I did in the Handyman Journey group, I don't imagine doing business without a board of directors, people that you can talk to and that will encourage you, because you're not going to be able to talk to your parents or your brothers and sisters and friends. They're more likely are going to tell you that you're crazy and it's not going to work, whatever your idea is. So you need a board of directors, a mastermind group, and you need to read business books, in my opinion. Business books are very, very helpful.
I agree. So as you sit there at your desk talking to me and thinking about your business, where are you going to be at in a year? What are you going to work on?
Well, this spring, my goal is to, by the end of spring, hire my first term apprentice. So I had an employee last year, about this time 1 year ago, I hired my first employee. He was a journeyman carpenter in the union. He didn't do finished work yet. He'd done, you know, pretty light, rough carpentry work. He mostly scaffolding work. Like I said, I spent a lot of years building scaffolding. Even during building scaffolding, I was doing side jobs, doing finish work for homeowners. And that's kind of where he was coming from, is he had done finish work for himself at home, remodeling the house and just, and, you know, basic carpentry, building a deck, stuff like that, but very, very limited carpentry, like full on carpentry experience, if you will. Mm-hmm. So I brought him on with the expectation of, I was like, hey, my primary focus is finish work, but there's going to be your bread and butter as far as just maybe a fence or deck build that he would be more inclined to. But like, I thought I could teach him finish carpentry faster than I assumed. And then it hit me. I realized, oh yeah, I've been doing finished carpentry all my life from a kid on, just always had that niche. It just wasn't working in that aspect of finished carpentry, whether it took a long time or even not even getting done at all because of just it not working out with the finish side. So I would get there right next to him and teach him. Obviously, I was doing a lot of training, you know, obviously, and I knew that was expected. It just didn't work.
Would you say that's a mindset issue?
Yes. So the detail to that is I expected a person to learn faster that hasn't done it. And then it dawned on me that takes years of experience and it's not working that way. I was paying them a higher wage than maybe a first term apprentice for non-union residential. I was paying them a higher wage than I should have. And I was like, okay, it's not working out at all for the finished stuff. Maybe I could pay them less. And I knew that wasn't the answer because you don't just go up to your employee and say, hey, I got to cut your pay significantly to match your skills. I guess I could have, but I knew it wasn't going to work for him. A mindset thing on his side was he was stressed out because he wasn't learning. You know what I mean?
I 100% understand. And I'd like to say a caveat there. He could be somebody that is top gun, kills it, framing houses, but the finish is a total different perspective.
It is. Yep. It's still power tools and safety and sometimes patience. You don't have to be too patient with framing. That the speed comes with learning patiently. But yeah, it's their own niche. It's specialization, you know. That's what I learned from the experience. I learned so much from that experience. And I know what it's like to be a technician, a carpenter, and feel like you don't know what you're doing. And that is stressful. Workers want to feel like they're good at what they do. So they want to go home and feel like, dude, I did such a good job today. Or, and especially once when they're getting paid a higher wage, going back to being an apprentice in the union, I said, a lot of the apprentices said, hey, you don't want to journey out so quick or in 4 years. There was like 6 years, 8 years in apprentices and they're still apprentices. How is that possible? Well, you didn't go to school or you have less hours. And it's almost like they liked the value of being an apprentice because they were more employable at a lower wage. And they were scared that if they got to be a journeyman, you better earn your keep. You're getting paid a high wage. And you got to be able to keep up.
You have to perform.
Yeah. So that's kind of the stressful environment that I created for my first employee was, I want to pay you well and you need to perform. And when he wasn't able to do so, he was quite overwhelmed. And I could tell it was just eating him alive, not being efficient enough. And he was just chomping at the bit, waiting to get on to that framing job or deck build job, or even just manual labor, fences, building fences and stuff. That's still got to be really quality and super straight and done correctly into code. But it was more, that was definitely his avenue. Your question is, what's my goal for this year? Where am I going right now? It's just been me other than my first worker last year. This year, I'm excited to hire an apprentice, start him out at the appropriate wage, knowing that, hey, you're a first-term apprentice. So that means I'm not able to hire somebody that has years of experience. Because personally, I just want to start with somebody green, pay them a good starting wage, steady raises. And that way they feel like, okay, my job is to learn and I'll be able to train them accordingly and they'll feel good about it. So they'll learn quicker that way.
100%.
Yeah, definitely my goal. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and if they have that clear pathway of the benchmarks they need to hit, they're going to feel good about it. They know what to do.
Exactly. I think KPIs is what they call that sometimes in business, key performance indicators. You want your employee to feel good about their job, and learning is important, but with the expectation that they are learning, not expected to know already. I'm getting ready to set up a small career page on my website, so that way it'll help for hiring the right person. On my website, I already have my core values and mission statements. My 2-year goal is to be at about 4 to 5 employees. So yeah, I want to start out with hiring an apprentice and then start hiring the journeyman type. Hire an apprentice, journeyman, and then maybe another apprentice, and then another journeyman. Keep a good ratio there.
That way they'll be a bit of a teacher as well.
Yeah, yeah. One of my core values is to learn, educate, and inspire. All carpenters started out not knowing how.
Not just with carpenters, but with all disciplines.
Yeah, yeah.
And having the right person that can lead you and guide you, that can be amazing.
Yeah, I really value the journeyman carpenters I learned the commercial finish work from. And the companies that allowed that to be a thing is take the time, teach your apprentices. Some of the companies I worked for weren't like that, but it was never the finish work. Finish work is patient type work, slow and steady, be fast and efficient, but learn slow and steady. I guess that's not really a good way to put it, but I really did have some good teachers along the way, and the companies that allowed the journeyman to teach apprentices with patience, the owner themselves started out in a truck, just like me. They know what it's like to start from the ground up and that the value of teaching apprentices.
I think that's pretty cool. And you'll have a pretty loyal person right there that's going to be very happy to come to work for you. You're going to treat him right, and he's going to see a career path. I think that's great.
Yeah.
So as you bring on a journeyman and another entry level person, would you see them maybe being based, say, in Tacoma or Olympia or something like that to kind of give some distance away from you?
Yeah. As a business grows, branches definitely have different branches, within the state of Washington, different locations. Absolutely. Sky's the limit. I do have a long-term vision of a large company. Mm-hmm. The garage door business is huge, right? I want my business to be like the garage door business, but for doors and trim and millwork. My biggest passion of all that is doors, because I just like doors a lot. When I was working as a door installer in the union, that's all we did was doors and trim. They did millwork installations, but majority ruled that we were solely focused on doors, door installation. It's a marketplace that is starting to get forgotten about. As we have lack of the young generation joining trades right now, mm-hmm. I do think that there's going to be a pretty substantial shortage in door specialization. because doors are one of those things that seems like, well, it's just a door. It's pretty easy to install. And it's fine for someone to think that doors are easy and they're just a simple door to install. I believe they're not. You can have a lot of issues with installing doors. I've had my own installs. What is going on? Why won't this door work well? And mm-hmm. you're frustrated and 8-10 hours into it and coming back the next day. But that's how you learn, is through specializing, and you only get better. So I've myself come a long way with how well I would install a door, or how quickly with high quality results I can install a door. And through time, my speed will increase. So I just think there's going to be a big problem with the lack of door specialization. Most of my leads are door repair. The customer's complaint, hey, I just had a door installed and I don't think it was installed correctly. Can you come take a look? That's my biggest job lead. And I show up, and sure enough, the door was installed at a level, at a plumb, at a square. And the guy got frustrated, or the gal, the person, the company got frustrated and left it as is in very rough shape. Mm. It happens all the time. So, and being in the handyman business, there's a lot of things homeowners have issues with, but when a door isn't working well, that's a big deal to them. It seems like it.
Well, very, very cool. Well, Jay, is there anything else? I've really enjoyed the time talking to you today and hearing, you know, your journey and where you're going and your mindset. Is there anything else that you'd like to cover before we wrap this up?
Let's see. We talked about my career coming through the union. I learned a lot there. I'm really glad I went through that experience, and I'm glad I'm doing what I'm doing now. My mindset from union to non-union has since changed. Whether one side weighs more than the other, I don't know. But I do know that residential construction in my area is basically non-union. And like I said, to work in finish work in the union, it was all on commercial jobs. Working for large contractors is great, and it can be a great experience. I enjoyed all of them. But when I fell in love with working with homeowners, I just knew that that's what I wanted to do, because they'll like make you lunch and stuff. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's a big deal.
Some iced tea.
Yeah. So I think following your dreams is so important, and being happy at work is important. As much money as I've made in the union on occasions, seeing a customer smile, hearing their story, getting a recommendation to their neighbor, and then going working for their neighbor, they are the best bosses I've ever had. I just love what I do. I love my experiences over the years. So I encourage people to join the trades, because there is a shortage. When I was in school, teachers told me not to join the trades. It was like they told my generation, don't join the trades. Now there's a shortage.
Correct.
And if you go to the high schools now, my stepdaughter plays sports. When we go to sporting events, I walk down my high school hallway and it's just posters and banners all over the place saying, hey, join the trades. It's amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I can slap myself on my cheeks like Home Alone and go, oh my gosh, that is so different than when I was in school. They were telling us, don't join the construction industry. Now there's a big problem with lack of tradesmen, and now they're trying to fix it.
An additional perspective on that, I graduated in 1984, and they definitely had shop class and they had things like this, but that was for the people who couldn't achieve. They wanted to make sure that was a backup for those other kind of people. But if you couldn't become some kind of white collar thing, they wanted to make sure that the blue collar there was an option. So they did offer that. They wanted to provide that experience, but they didn't push anybody to it. It was always, well, if you can't do that, there's still this that you can do.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I agree with you. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Well, the whole topic of getting more people into the trades and realizing the whole awesome options and career that it can be, I think we really need to work on that. And I'm glad to see that that's being done. Not everybody's going to get a programming job making $300,000 a year. And we obviously see there's a lot of tech jobs that are starting to be cut at this point in time.
Yeah, that's why I think the handyman industry, self-employed industry, is booming right now. Maybe some of those white-collar type jobs, or like you said, tech jobs, are either getting replaced with, computers alone, or just, I know there's a lot of stories of, people leaving their career to work for homeowners. Cause like I said, they really are the best boss out there.
There's a lot of issues that go into it, but I'm glad to see that it's starting to receive national attention. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better, but it will get better.
Yeah.
Well, Jay, dang good to have you on the show today.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
We'll go ahead and wrap it up. Thank you so much for being on. Thank you for sharing. And Jay, I will talk to you soon.
All righty. Yeah. Talk to you soon, John.
In general, what is the expected lifespan of a California redwood? The next guest on the Blue Collar Voices show is Brendan Van Camp. Brendan has a traveling sawmill, and he also builds log cabins. He plans on a few more aspects to his business, but here is a short little clip from our interview.
So going along this path of creating this business, wanting to get out of the government, I figured, okay, I need to have different revenue streams of money. And so custom milling for customers on site, that's easy. But you can only do that, so much a month, and weather gets bad, that's not going to create any revenue for you. So I met at work a buddy of mine. He's a woodworker, and he heard me say I had a portable sawmill. So he came out from work one day to my property. He looked around and he said, you need a solar kiln. I'm like, why do I need a solar kiln? Granted, I had no intention of selling lumber. He's like, because you could dry lumber faster. I had, some lumber in my pole barn that was stacked and stickered air drying.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Blue Collar Voices show. On this episode's page on bluecollarvoices.com, you will find show notes and any relevant links. If you are not subscribed to get notifications of new show episodes, you can do that at bluecollarvoices.com as well. Hey, let me know what you think. I'd love to hear from you. See you next time.
I'll be back.